You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Kate Fagan is going to spend a little time here doing show with us, and Greg Cody, who is now hemorrhaging. What do we want to explain to Kate about the condition that Greg Cody has been in today as we go down the back in my day path? I don't know, Kate, have you ever heard of Greg Cody back in my day? Are you familiar with this concept?
I'm not familiar with this concept.
Okay. He pines for a different time. He pines for a time a long time ago. He is our resident dinosaur. And at this point, he actively plays defense against the show with an incompetence that is stupefying and breathtaking. Today, with a bloody leg, because we banished him to his room where he's cut his leg on his bed. And he is now on the phone and about to do back in my day.
He yearns for a time where things were more difficult.
That's right. Yes. He is anti-technology. All right, Greg, why don't you explain?
Well, what about a tetanus shot? If he cut his leg, does he want to go to a time before they had tetanus shots?
Yes, he longs for the time.
I would be tempted.
Okay, Greg, how would you explain back in my day to Kate? What would be your working definition for it?
I like to rail against technology and advances and progress and harken back to a time approximately very late 50s into mid 60s.
A simpler time.
Cast back to, right.
All right, time now for Greg Cody's Back in My Day.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Churches.
Oh, so, no.
I happen to follow on Instagram a certain former unnamed Miami Dolphins quarterback now working in Nashville. And the other day, there's a post on the family headed to church. And later, a video of some of that church service. Good Lord, what has happened to organized religion? I blink, step away from the church for a few short decades, and everything changes. In that video were mic'd-up singers and dancers on a mammoth stage and a full live band backlit in silhouette a floor above. What in God's name? It looked like a Broadway musical. I expected Lin-Manuel Miranda to sweep on stage and start rapping about Aaron Burr. Or was this the opening scene from John Goodman's The Righteous Gemstones? Nope. It was just another mega church wrapping religion and entertainment and bombast. This particular church even describes itself as, quote, hyperactive and fully charged. Wow. Drums and guitars, strobe lights, jumbotron video screens like at sporting events. There's even a mega church in Grapevine, Texas that has a professional wrestling match in the middle of its service. Hey, when you send up a prayer, yell so God can hear it all over the noise. These churches take in millions in donations. So not enough that Joel Osteen's church in Houston didn't raise eyebrows by accepting $4.4 million in federal PPP money last year. Anywho, the worship centers of today are a far cry from the humble church of my youth, like Trinity Lutheran, where my mom and I would go most Sundays. Could never get my dad to join us. He made a running joke that while we were at church, he was spending his Sunday morning praying at St. Mattress. Church was quiet back then. You'd hear the air conditioning hum, cut by the rumbling drone of the pastor's monotone sermon or the funereal chords played by an ancient organist in a gray beehive. Every few minutes, the flock would slowly rise as one and flip through hymnals, me lip-syncing words, my voice only audible for the closing amen. Truth be known, I, maybe 12 years old, typically caught a quick wink or two during Pastor Haslodge's sermon, though always with one eye open in case Mom swiveled her head with an admonishing stare or a sharp elbow. Those sermons ranked with Chris Schenkel describing the soft clatter of bowling pins as my favorite nap sounds. The point is, church used to be purposefully quiet, steadfastly boring, emitting a reverential aura, not the vibe of a party or show. Guess what? A lot more people went to church back then. U.S. church attendance crested at around 70% until the late 1990s, when began a precipitous drop of more than 20 percentage points to today's level. So here's the thought. Get back to your roots, church. Quit trying to be a concert, a musical, or a stage show. Never forget that the church in America was a hell of a lot more popular when it felt like penance paid, not a party. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was.
Yeah. Back in my All right, day. So, nice. Kate, yes, we will get Kate's appraisal of this. Now, are you familiar, Kate, with Chris Cody, and that he is the son of Greg Cody, and you saw shame cresting on his face? On his face. Chris, how are you feeling right now? Like, what's the matter?
Honestly, I was more nervous going into that when the first thing he said was churches. But right. Honestly, I think he did okay.
He tied it all together. It was very well done by Greg.
Okay, I felt like Kate was partially engaged, but also a little bored in spots. Is that an accurate appraisal, or I don't want to speak for you?
No, I think I'm in full agreement. I, in fact, the whole time was thinking about this new Instagram handle that I follow called Pastor Sneakers. So Preacher's Sneakers is the Instagram handle. And perhaps this should have been part of back in my day, because all this Instagram handle does is take the $1,000 sneakers that these hip new preachers wear and put the price tag on them and highlight the changing in our religious adherence as Americans. So I'm fully in favor of this back in the day.
It's not just the sneakers, right, Kate. They've branched out to designer handbags and expensive coats. It's really a treasure trove.
It's worth a follow, really.
Well, what's happened here with, I am going to be a little ancient here, Lil Nas and his Satan shoes. And
Lil Nas X, Dan.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's a fine.
And his Satan shoes. And what's happening here? Because Kate is a sneakerhead. Mike, she's more of a sneakerhead than you are.
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly. Kate's one of the biggest sneakerheads I know. She makes her own shoes.
And I do make my own shoes. And this was interesting because I was watching a clip from Fox News this morning, a thing I don't often do, but Will Cain was on it, and they had this conversation about the Lil Nas X, the Lil Nas X sneaker, thinking that Nike themselves were making the Satan shoe. And they completely missed the fact that actually people who take Nikes and then design them had made the Satan shoe. And that's actually what I do, is I take Nikes and I break them down and then I build them back up. So I could have made something like this Satan shoe.
Cody has owned three pairs of shoes his entire life. Three pairs of shoes is what Greg Cody has had.
Nike's actually suing this shoe boutique, Mischief, that did this collaboration with Lil Nas X because of things that Kate just outlined. Fox and Friends is leading with, Nike is the devil. And Nike's like, wait, we didn't ask for
any
of this.
We're not the devil. Wait a minute. That is exactly what's happening here.
If we're the devil, we're going to make our own money off of it.
Supporting Colin Kaepernick was the first evidence of them being the devil, I believe. Yeah.
Which you knew, given the Colin Kaepernick stuff in their history, Fox and the whole culture war thing that's going on right now was going to jump at the chance and make Nike the villain here. Nike's an innocent bystander. I mean, I use that term loosely, but I wonder if this lawsuit's not so much about the bad press, but the fact that Lil Nas X sold these shoes for $1,000 a pair, and Nike's like, wait a second, you're using us to get by. We're getting all the headache from this in the bad PR and none of the profits.
Kate, to what degree are you, like, who rivals you in terms of sneakerhead? Who are the people that you look at in our industry that you're like, okay, that person cares about sneakers the same way I do?
Who are my heroes in the sneaker industry?
Yes. Who do you look up to?
Yeah. My sleeper hero is actually Kevin Nagandi from ESPN.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
I wouldn't have thought it.
I underestimate him. I'm not sure why I wouldn't have thought it. Unfair of me, but I would not have thought it. Nagandi, a huge sneakerhead. Did not know that.
Another one, this is going to surprise you, Don Van Natta.
No.
Get out of here.
No.
Kate, get out of here.
That can't be true. No.
Bring in the heat.
I mean, DVN?
No.
Really?
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Are you stunned that Don Van Natta, Pulitzer Prize winner Don Van Natta, is one of America's foremost sneakerheads?
Don will be thrilled because he shows up with heat to Outside the Lines back in the day. Not a thing that I say often.
Yeah. That's stunning.
It really is.
Who's the most overrated shoe person at ESPN?
Does anybody have any input on this one? This is a tough one to call out.
I got nothing for you, Kit.
I don't have anything for you either.
It's an impossible.
You don't. You have nothing.
An impossible question to answer because you're either in the game or you're not.
If we want to broaden it out, then Shannon Sharpe is the most overrated.
Whoa.
Okay.
And mostly I'm just calling this out. Because he thinks he's the number one. So once he set that standard, he absolutely has to be overrated.
Well, what are your credentials? Can you explain it to the people who don't understand?
Yeah, so the credentials are, in my mind, are how many pairs of sneakers you have, not just that are like expensive, but that are hard to get. So I have a couple of pairs of sneakers from Oregon, sneakers that Oregon only gets directly from Nike for like their volleyball team. So these are the indie hits that I have, these special collaborations,
right?
Like the Lil Nas X one, but I don't have those.
How does one go about getting those Oregon sneakers? Like
one puts in a lot of work and befriends people in the Oregon administration and the Oregon athletic department. Right. And then one might screenshot a release and send it to someone within that administration and say, these are really hot, ..
If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
What is the most treasured item in your collection? Is it, what is your greatest of the indie hits, or is it something more mainstream?
My most treasured item is a pair of custom one of one Jordans from a boutique in New Zealand that were made specially for my wedding. So yeah,
that's pretty good. Emotional. Greg Cody's got something here. Why were you leaning into the Zoom, Greg? You wanted to comment
Say
here?
It.
Yeah. Whatever happened to $4 kids? I get it back in my day that Kate would absolutely hate on making fun of sneakerheads.
Do you have that? Do you have it in your computer somewhere? Can you find it and then do that one right in Kate's face? Do you think you can find it?
No, I dispose of all these when they're done. It was fairly recent. Didn't I do it like 2 months ago or something?
We can try to find the audio so you don't
Are these your $4 church kids? Those are those? Yeah.
Tom McCann's.
Let's see if we can find this. There was actually something I wanted to ask Kate about because we were playing the sound from Kim Mulkey earlier, the Baylor University coach. Stu Gatz was telling you that he enjoyed last night he watched the women's game more than he watched the men's game. He was also saying something, Kate, that I don't know to necessarily be true. He is saying that the women shooters are better than the men shooters. I don't know enough to know. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying that I haven't watched women's basketball like that where I would say that the women are shooting better than the men.
Well, Kate, I left a men's game in which one of the teams had 17 points at the half and flipped over to the women's game, which was really, really entertaining. And Paige Beckers has taken step back threes, and that game aesthetically to me was more pleasing than the men's game.
Well, I think that game in particular was more pleasing, but those two teams probably should have been in the finals, or it should have at least been a Final Four game. So I would agree that that game was superior than a lot of the men's games we watch, but I don't know that I think that the women are better shooters overall.
Do you think it might be just a small sample and Stu Gatz wanting to be really politically correct?
Yeah,
like
perhaps,
extra
politically everyone being correct. Afraid to check him on it.
I mean, she's better than Bird.
Yeah, because you had to come to me to ask to check Stu Gatz on that.
Well, thank you.
Probably afraid to
Yes,
check him.
That is exactly what happened. This is why we so badly needed a woman around here, Kate. And that's exactly what happened. Stu Gatz went to the furthest possible reaches, and I...
To the two best teams.
And Kate and I, woke guy, afraid to correct him. Like I'm just afraid. I'm okay. You say they're okay. That doesn't sound like.
Are we including Steph Curry?
I mean, Dan still thought they were playing halves.
That's true. Fair enough. He did checkmate me there when I corrected him on third quarter. But here's Kim Mulkey yesterday. Maximum Kim Mulkey. Let's hear her.
I don't think my words will matter. But after the games today and tomorrow, there's four teams left. I think on the men's side and the women's side. They need to dump the COVID testing. Wouldn't it be a shame to keep COVID testing and then you got kids that end up having test positive or something and they don't get to play in the Final Four? So you need to just forget the COVID test and let the four teams that are playing in each Final Four go battle it out.
Wow.
Let me posit that Kim Mulkey is my dark horse for person in sports that you never want to cross. She might even not be the dark horse. She might just be number one person in sports that is terrifying.
Bumping out Mick Cronin, huh?
Well, but didn't she try to get you fired at ESPN?
That could be. This could be a personal feeling for me, since actually there were numerous times that I was at a women's Final Four or like the WNBA draft, and I hid from Kim Mulkey. And I'm a little bit embarrassed by that, but I would see her in a hallway and I would hide from her because she did try to get me fired. She called the higher ups and she told them that I should be fired.
What?
Do you want to know why?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know Brittany Griner, Dan, right?
Yes.
Sue? Brittany Griner. Yes?
Sue Gatz, are you listening right now?
Yes, I am.
Do you know who Brittany Griner is?
I know who Brittany Griner is.
Cool. May want to answer the question. Cool.
Okay. So I did a story in which Brittany Griner told me that when she was at Baylor, that she was not allowed to be openly gay.
Moderna.
And this wasn't a shocking story, considering it is actually written in the handbook of Baylor University that you are not allowed to be openly gay at Baylor University. But after we put out that story, Kim Mulkey believed that I had forced Brittany Griner to say this, and she told the higher-ups at ESPN that I needed to be fired for this. So I proceeded to hide from her whenever I saw her, which that was my solution to this problem.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kate Fagan out here doing journalism, hiding from the people who are in charge. Kim Mulkey saying that. I feel like we're all a little pandemicked out. I feel like we are all crawling toward the finish line. I also think it's funny the lack of perspective involved in saying, oh, these poor kids in the Final Four, let's just stop testing everybody. Let's just stop caring about any of this stuff because, you know, you see what they're doing in Florida. Who cares anymore?
I think there's a lack of perspective in Waco, Texas in general. There's a little bit of a bubble where Kim Mulkey believes that she's a godlike figure in Waco, which she is a godlike figure in Waco. So I think that what translates really well in Waco doesn't necessarily translate at the post-game press conference.
Look at Chris Cody getting in here with some information. 2019 headline, women are better than men at the free throw line.
Well, how about Paige Becker's 46% from the three-point stripe? How about that? I mean,
three-point stripe.
Oh, the charity stripe, Moderna, my mom.
So lazy.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
So, Chris, give me the stats.
Over 30-year period, the women shoot a 3% higher from the free throw line.
Yeah.
I'm not finding anything from three. I mean, you were kind of talking. I felt like you were talking about from three.
Nothing brings the crowds in like some good free throw shooting.
Yeah. It was a great game, though.
It was just anything I could find to help you, Stugatz. I was just looking for any stat. That was...
Well, I didn't need help until Kate came on. I was doing just fine. Mike and Dan weren't checking on me. Kate, how many pairs of sneakers do you have? How many pairs do you have?
I try to keep it at like 50.
Wow.
Oh, so when you bring a new one in, so when you bring a new one in, you gotta say bye to some.
Yeah, not a one-to-one trade out, but like, you know, after it might, if I hit 60, then I'll get rid of some.
Do you have like a bottom 10 that you're like, all right, it, the five that are coming out are from this group of 10 and I just got to decide.
Do you know the next sneaker out the door right now?
Yeah, it's a feeling. You know, you look at it, you've looked at it for a full year and you haven't worn it.
Right.
But some of them you can't get rid of because somebody else got them for you. Mm. Tricky. Mm-hmm. It's tricky stabilizing this collection. So where are we in terms of who thinks it was a foul in the game last night?
I thought it was a foul.
A lot of people were saying, though, like context of the game, that they were kind of not calling very much in the way of contact. But I don't know. The still image I saw of her being hit by two players on both elbows seemed like it
was
100% a foul.
I don't want to say on her.
The
officiating was fine because I know Baylor had a lot more free throw attempts than UConn in the first half. But to me, that was a bad call.
Yeah, I don't quite get the context argument, like, because it's not like it's all just a feeling, right? Where you're like, well, they got that call, and then we got that call, and then you're trying to balance it out. It's kind of almost like when you're playing blackjack and you decide you're every once in a while going to hit on 16.
Right.
You know, like you just have to judge the call based on the framework of the play, and it was definitely a foul.
Yes.
Unless you were, you know, so like unless they were UConn people who clearly were like context.
I don't think it was a context in terms of like who got which calls. It was more like this game is being officiated loosely, so it fits with that general motif. Also, the person who wavers on hitting on 16 is the worst.
Yeah, but
you either always do it or you never do. But it's never a feel thing.
You have to be consistent.
No, you have to. No, it is a feel thing.
No, the people who sit at the blackjack.
It's not a feel thing, Stu. God, stop.
The people who sit at the blackjack table and go, oh, my gut says to hit this one. Like, go bleep yourself with your gut.
Or they pretend like they're counting cards, right? Where they're like,
Kate, I
think there's a lot of face cards that are already on the table. So it's probably going to be a low card.
No, I am gambling my money, not your money. I'm not worried about your money. I'm gambling my money. And if my gut tells me hit on a 16, I'm hitting on a 16. I'm not worried about the rest of the table. Sorry.
Do you think that over the course of however often you've played blackjack, that this going with your gut has gotten you a higher rate of a percentage of success?
No.
Yeah, but there are times in a blackjack game where it's close. Because like if you ask the dealer a lot, what should I do here? They always have an answer for you. But there are times where they're like, this one's close. Like you can kind of do either one here.
But the point
is one of those ones that sometimes, you know.
But the point is that you always do the same thing no matter what. Like you either always hit on 16 or you never hit on 16. This time I will, but that time I won't. The worst.
If the table's littered with face cards, you might want to hit on a 16 thinking of four.
Oh, so you're the fake counting card guy then.
It's littered with face cards for that one hand, but it's a six deck shoot. Like you don't know what's coming out next.
And neither do you.
Precisely, which is why I always do the same thing.
Right, but what if I get the four when I hit with a six, and then the dealer turns, you think the dealer has 20, he does it, then the dealer has 16, and then the face comes, and he breaks, and everyone wins. How about that, huh? What do you got, smart guy?
you don't know what the dealer has.
That is one example of when it would work out for you.
Sometimes you just get that feeling in the gut, those two guys.
All you gotta do, play here is just never sit at third base. That's your play. Nobody can pay attention to what would have happened if you're sitting second.
Correct. I'm second or shortstop usually.
Play third base.
Never, ever play third base. I don't want that responsibility.
The second I sit down at a blackjack table and someone goes, oh, my gut tells me, I get up and leave. I grab my chips and I leave. It is the most obnoxious thing.
I did not have Witty being serious blackjack.
I know, it's crazy.
No, I love playing blackjack. I'm like the pandemic has killed like one of my favorite hobbies. But
Chris, you did have him playing the percentages, of course, right? I mean, that's obvious with Whittingham.
I'm also definitely the guy that's telling everyone else at the table what to do and gets angry when they don't do what I say.
Yeah, I hate that guy. Then, you know what?
Yeah,
get up and leave the table. I mean, that's the option. There's plenty of other tables there if you don't like playing with me.
That's fair. And I also, I'm not usually playing dollar amounts where I can really, like, you have to get to a space where you're playing, like, $50, $100 tables if you're going to start telling people what to do or that they're wasting their money.
Where do you get the $5?
I usually play 20.
Don't you dare hit that.
I definitely think the idea of hitting or not hitting on a 16 is kind of a It's a division in humanity. We can say the half of people are people who will go with their gut, and half of people are people who will always do the same thing on 16. Well, it's like a personality test.
I thought you were going to say like either risk averse or risk welcoming, right? Like the people who always hit are have like a certain mentality of like, okay, I'm okay with taking this chance here, as opposed to the for me, the stayers are like, I'm very conservative.
What are
I don't,
you
I don't want to go for it. I'm a hitter. I'm like fully.
Really?
Well, I'll always take a card at 16.
Staying on 16 to me is almost equivalent to the coach who doesn't go for two at the end of the game because they want to prolong life. Like the goal of staying on 16 is like, you just want a little bit longer where you're in the game. So at least when the dealer takes their cards, like you have hope in your heart, even yes. though your chances of winning were highest at the moment of taking or not taking.
Wait,
so this we can turn this to sports at any point. You
this is when they're showing a 10 or a 9, right? Like you don't.
I'm not hitting 16 against a 6.
No.
I'm taking a card on 16 against a 7.
Oh, I've hit a 16 against a 6.
I always do it.
16 against a 6. I'm that guy. I'm taking a card. 16.
No. 16 against a 7. 16 against a 6. I mean,
how do you feel about it? What if your 16 is an ace 5 combo? How do you feel about that?
Oh, it's soft 16. Right. You're always taking a card. Yeah.
Okay.
If the dealer is showing a 6, I'm probably doubling. That's like the way I play it. Like if I have less, if I can't bust, I'm probably doubling.
But are you doubling like, a 12? Like what are you doing?
Yeah. Well, not a 12 because I can bust there. But if I have like a crappy, like I don't have to get to 21 to double is what I'm saying.
If they have a six and you have a 4, right? You'll take the 14.
Double.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I know that's
I'm
dumb.
I'm always looking for ways to get more money on the table.
100%.
Like, always. 100%. Like if I have sevens, I'm like, let's split them. Let's go.
Always rooting for 11.
Yeah,
Whatever my first card is, give me 11.
I remember the first. Yeah. I think I doubled 7 against a 6 once, and the dealer was like, "What are you doing?" But yeah. I was like, "No, I'm taking every chance to double against a 6."
Chris, you're not screwing people over because, like, most times you're just going to take one card,
right?
You know. But Chris, if you want more money on the table, you could bypass the $5 table.
Well, that's just a minimum.
Stugatz, I'm inferring that you haven't played a ton of blackjack in your life.
No, I have. I mean,
you have.
Yeah.
No, well, no. What you're inferring is that Stugatz does not really believe in math very much.
Yes, I believe in gut. I mean, that's it. I believe in feeling, Gate, okay? And if I feel like there's a 5 coming out of there, I'm hitting with a 6. I mean, that's with a 16. That's how I'm doing it. I don't care if the rest of the table is judging me.
You just have a table to yourself. I'm a misery to play blackjack with. But when you get a good table of like 6 people that know what they're doing, never get up and leave. It's the best. It's the best.
Is it the best? I feel like a good craps table is better than a good blackjack table.
You know what? I'm so enamored with blackjack. I've actually never played craps before.
You are missing out.
Yeah.
I'm
intimidated by craps. It seems like
everyone's cheering and high-fiving and you're looking over like, oh, that looks like a fun table.
Yeah, I can get why it looks intimidating though. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
To be 100, like it's my favorite table game and I don't even know like all the possible bets that I could have on the board. It's a lot.
You lose $100 so fast.
Yeah.
Craps.
Doesn't a craps table just look like a foreign language that's been spread out along the table? That's what I think. Every time I walk by, I'm like, that's a foreign language.
I need to watch like a YouTube tutorial to get ready for craps.
But I feel like I'm missing out, Kate. Like I'm with you. It's confusing. I'm not certain how to play, but there's always a party at that table. And I feel like I'm missing out on the party, you know?
Either a party or everyone's miserable.
Yeah. Right. Or everyone's lost all their money for the night in 10 minutes.
Yeah. There's something just about them all standing up, crowded around together that acts, it's got a club vibe.
Yes.
Versus blackjack kind of has more of like a steakhouse vibe.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's
where
fair.
You're seated.
Yeah. And people always talk anecdotally about the hot craps table being
the hot craps
like
table.
Like it's one of the best things in the world. But I've never actually experienced
it. There's nothing better than a good hot craps table.
It's the high.
No, but then you run in and you shake it all up, and all of a sudden it's not hot, and everyone's blaming you.
No, you're chasing the dragon the entire time. And if you have a hot table on your first craps experience, you're toast forever because you're always chasing that high.
There's nothing worse than being the guy that ruins the hot table address.
That's what I'm saying.
Put it on the poll, right. Guillermo, yes, at Levitard Show. Is there anything worse than being the one who ruined the hot craps table? Chasing the dragon, huh, Mike? What?
Yeah, it's like,
what's that?
It's like heroin.
What is? Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because everyone says the best high you ever get is the first time you do heroin, and that's why people become so addicted to it, because they're always chasing how they felt that first time.
Do you think there are many people who go in there and the way they feel the first time is what Chris is describing, which is the table's mad at them because they've ruined the hot craps table? Is that the opposite of chasing the dragon?
Yes, it's running away from the dragon.
It's a little run.
I just sprint from the table. I go back to my... Yeah. It's usually on a cruise when I'm hitting the craps table.
Every hot table that I've ever played at just pales in comparison to that first time at the Harrah's in Las Vegas in 2010. Although... I found a nice little way to supplement your high, and that's celebrity craps. Whether it's creeping on Julio Jones at the Atlantis.
Oh, what a blast.
Or watching Virgil, Ted DiBiase's former manager, bust out in New Orleans. That's the new high. That's my new dragon.
So I've always thought that the craps table, like the magical craps table, was more of a movie trope than a reality. We have numerous people right now, right here, who have said that they have experienced the thrill of a magical craps table.
Kate, this is what you have to understand. There have been very few times in your life where you have felt anything at life that feels as good as that craps table, where you're shouting with strangers you wouldn't talk to under other circumstances. You are slapping five and hugging people that you don't like in real life, but now you're on a magical unicorn riding toward the sky.
Let me get that heart eight, baby.
And that person hits a heart eight, but he's got ass crack for days, and he doesn't smell particularly good, but he just hit the heart eight, and I was betting a quarter because I went big because the table was hot. And so, yeah, that is something that is dangerous.
You seem experienced.
Yes, well, because I've never felt such flight of my soul and my heart.
I've got a Dan Le Batard crab story that will blow your mind. That. It will you never be told. That. I've signed a non-disclosure agreement.
The Atlantis?
It's an amazing story.
Oh, sign the same disclosure.
Yeah, we've got the NDA.
I love that he calls it a disclosure because, of course, to God, you would sign the disclosure agreement.
I pulled a fast one on you, and I put a disclosure agreement in front of you.
The non. Did you guys find...
You pulled an Ursula Little Mermaid trick on her?
So I could tell the story.
Do you have back there the... I want to just see Kate's reaction to Greg Cody's sneakerhead back in my day. This is directed right at you, Kate. You will have the last word after we play an old back in my day where Greg Cody rails against sneakerheads.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Shoes. So I get an online alert I didn't ask for over the weekend. Might have been an ad or something. Popped up like an official announcement or bulletin, said Nike Air Griffey Max 1 Freshwater, available Monday, 10 a.m. Eastern. What the hell? I Googled it to find out it's some sort of a new but retro sneaker. Retro means they're recycling an old product, but at today's prices. I got a kick out of the precise announcement of the minute it would go on sale, as if thousands of people were queued up in a digital line to be the first on their block to buy the new old sneaker.
They are.
Which sadly, undoubtedly, was true. When did the once lowly sneaker become the trendy superstar behind a red velvet rope as adoring fans swooned holding up fistfuls of dollars to throw at the preening shoe? Blame it on Air Jordans in the mid-80s, designer athlete footwear then as now, exorbitantly overpriced then as now, pandering to our desire for status symbols head to toe, and then as now, the very finest example of Chinese, Vietnamese, or Indonesian craftsmanship. Women always used to get the sexist rap for being shoeaholics, for having dozens of shoes even though you can only wear one pair at a time. It's men too, of course. My wife has a lawyer friend who has not a walk-in closet devoted exclusively to dress shoes, but a guest bedroom. I swear it. You know how many shoes Greg Cody has and wears in a given year? Three. pair of scuffed up black dress shoes.
Not three
a pair
pairs.
Of sneakers whose brand I couldn't even tell you. And a pair of Sperry topsider deck shoes I live in and wish to be buried or cremated in. My wife's choice. But it's trendy sneakers that have become the status, routinely priced at $170 or much more. The price driven up by hell-bent millennial demand. Did you know that in 1957, a pair of Converse sneakers sold for $395? In today's dollars, that would be about $27. This tells you the ridiculous markup on designer sneakers and the gullibility of folks willing to pay it. It has become a psychological obsession. There is a website called sneakernews.com. Why? There is an app where you enter into a drawing to be the first allowed to buy a new product. There is a gruesome new word in the lexicon. It was invented to justify charging you a month's rent for glorified sneakers. The word is athleisure wear. They probably had that in mind when they made the Balenciaga Triple S sneaker. If I ever see a pair of $1,000 sneakers on someone's feet, you know where you're going to see them next? Dangling from a telephone wire. Folks, our feet don't deserve that kind of luxury. Our feet have done nothing to earn it. They're feet. They smell. They're ugly. They need their nails clipped. Also, feet are dumb. You could fashion a pair of shoes made out of cardboard and your feet wouldn't say a word. You know, when I was around 10 or 12 years old, Wild Bill Cody would drive me from 1440 to the local Tom McCann, and I'd buy two pair of high-top cloth kids for $8.99. That was after I outgrew the hand-me-downs from my older brother, Uncle Dick Cody. Dial it back and start embracing the cheapest footwear you can find because, here it comes, it's good for the soul. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was back in my day.
Kate, you look embarrassed. You
it
look
was better
you,
second
Kate,
time around.
You look embarrassed. If by better, you mean worse. You groaned. I could see you groan at the soul pun at the end. There he is. You can see him in the Zoom. Kate, you give your rebuttal here.
I was stunned at the irony that in a segment that is designed to be about nostalgia and how we want to go back to old things and be a part of those moments in our childhood. And that is my understanding of what Back in My Day is really searching for. It's trying to find the moments that made us feel those feelings we felt as kids, whether it was Christmas, yeah. Whether it was a boring church service. The point of that entire segment is to find that feeling again. And so the irony that we are going to dismiss the beautiful nostalgia that is sneaker culture, because sneaker culture is not about money. It is not about paying exorbitant prices. It is about finding the joy of that pair of sneakers that you owned when you were 8 years old. That is the heart of sneakerhead culture. And so mostly I think that there's a twisted backwardness to the logic of that particular sneakerhead commentary on Back in My Day.
And there irony. There you go. And that's why he's the show killer. Look at him wheezing through a laugh. Yes, that is correct. He has fallen into his bed.
What has happened?
He has fallen into his bed. He's been neutralized with a bloody leg. If you want her new book, All the Colors Came Out, A Father, A Daughter, and A Lifetime of Lessons, it's going to be released May 18th. You can pre-order that now. And again, Kate, before you get out of here, you are an ALS advocate. Just tell people how it is they can help you and Tom Haberstroh and our friend Boog Shambi on some of the things that you guys care about.
Yeah, so mostly it's just spreading the word about the reality of ALS, because just so many people don't understand this is a 100% fatal disease, and it's not an incurable disease, it's an underfunded disease. And there are plenty of organizations, I am ALS, ALS-TDI, Google ALS, there's like 30 to 50 organizations trying to do this work to find a cure and to bring awareness and understanding. So thank you for that platform there, because obviously ALS is something that is near and dear to my heart, to finding a way to end it.
Tell people why they should buy your book.
They should buy my book because it's a love letter to my dad. And because I hope what it does is that it gives people some perspective about how they want to show up for people that they love. And I think that's something that all of us struggle with at one point or another, is how are we going to arrange our lives to like be there for people that we love during this different time in our life rather than childhood.
For those who don't know your backstory, Kate, and for those who do not know what it is that you were doing at ESPN, I know we covered some of this the last time you were on with us.
Hiding from Kim Mulkey. Yeah.
But you left the industry, basically, to care for your dad. So this book is a byproduct of that, correct?
Yeah, this book is about how one of the reasons I left ESPN is because my dad and I had grown up playing hoops together. And our relationship had just stalled, and we hadn't connected in the way that I thought we would when I was an adult. And then when he got diagnosed with ALS, it was like there was a ticking clock, and I didn't want to be the person who my dad died and I had never said the things that I needed to say, and that we hadn't repaired our relationship. And I knew I needed time with him, and there was no way I was going to be able to be at ESPN and get the time with him that I needed. So I made the decision to spend the time with him, and it was the best decision I ever made.
May 18th, All the Colors came out, A Father, A Daughter, and A Lifetime of Lessons. You can pre-order that now. Thank you, Kate, for being on with us.
Thanks, y'all. Appreciate it.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.